a week from today, Lord willing, Friends and Family Day with a potluck fellowship meal. So make your plans to be here and to bring as many as you can with you. But don't do what this first church bulletin blooper says. Attend church and you'll hear an excellent speaker and heave a healthy lunch. Let's not do that. A second one, the church will host an evening of fine dining, superb entertainment, and gracious hostility. The peacemaking meeting, I love this one, scheduled for today has been canceled due to a conflict. And that does lead us to our lesson tonight. In relationships, conflict is inevitable. Because we're different, because we have different ways of doing things, different experiences, different attitudes, and so forth, because we're human, and because we make mistakes, relationships and conflict in them is inevitable. It's true within our families, among our friends, at work, at school, and yes, even within our church family. But God calls us to be peacemakers, peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Ephesians 4 verse 3 says, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. And the word endeavoring there means to make every effort. We're to make every effort. We're to do everything that we can to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. That means we're to be active in this process. 1 Thessalonians 5:13, Paul admonished, be at peace among yourselves, or live in peace with each other. But we've just said that conflict is inevitable. But yes, we are called to be peacemakers. So how do we make peace when conflict arises? I want us to think a few moments about the 4 G's. I started to call this 4G technology tonight, and some of you know the commercial to which I refer. But 4 G's that will help us make peace when conflict arises. The first G is glorify God. Glorify God. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul, addressing a church that was filled with problems, including relationship problems, he says, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. And again, that's even in the context of problems within that church family. So that was to be their guiding motive here. That whatever they did, whether it was eating or drinking, whatever they were to do it all to the glory of God. He went on to say, do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church, or your fellow Christians. Even as I try to please everybody in every way, for I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. And then chapter 11, verse 1, he continues, follow me as I follow Christ. But he emphasizes, whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. How does that pertain to resolving conflict when it arises in our relationships? We can glorify God by trusting Him, obeying Him, imitating Him, and yes, seeking to bring Him glory in every aspect of our lives, including our relationships. And one of the best ways to keep these concerns uppermost in our minds is to ask ourselves, in times of conflict, how can I please and honor the Lord in this situation? So conflict arises in a relationship that's very, very important to us. We need to ask, first G, how can I glorify God in this manner? And the answer will, as we formulate an answer, it will help us to think about how we're going to respond and how we're not going to respond in this situation of conflict. You see, as we ask ourselves this question, it will automatically eliminate some inappropriate ways of handling conflict, like seeking revenge. Though that may be a desire, is to seek revenge against someone who has hurt us. If we ask ourselves, how can I glorify God in this matter? We realize that's not going to glorify Him. Isn't that what Paul wrote? Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. How can I glorify God? Someone has said or done something against me. I realize if I try to get back at that person, if I try to say something or do something against him or her, that's not going to bring glory to God. Nor is gossiping and slandering. When we seek to glorify Him, that's not going to do it, is it? Proverbs 16:28 says, a perverse man stirs up dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. 2 Corinthians 12:20, Paul writes to this church at Corinth, I'm afraid that when I come, I may not find you as I want you to be. And you may not find me as you want me to be. I fear that there may be quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, factions, slander, gossip, arrogance, and disorder. Do you remember Mama saying, just wait till Daddy gets home? And when, if you had done something you weren't supposed to, then that might cause fear and trepidation in your life. I think Paul is speaking as the spiritual father here to these Christians. They've been doing things they should not. They've been gossiping, slandering, quarreling, outbursts of anger. I'm afraid that when I come, I may not find you as I want you to be, and you may not find me as you want me to be. How so? Because he would come with a rod of correction. He would rebuke them for their misbehavior. And as you look at this list of things, you see quarreling, jealousy, so forth. These are not God-honoring ways of handling conflict. Rather, they intensify conflict. So the first G is, how can I please and honor the Lord in this situation? And that's going to help us select the right method. Second G, get the log out of your own eye. And you recognize that from the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 7:5. Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. In the immediate context, Jesus had said, judge not that you be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, you shall be judged. And he's talking about judging hypocritically. Hypocrite. Remove the plank, that log from your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. He's not saying to ignore that speck, but he is saying start with yourself first. I think Jesus had a sense of humor. Because as he's even given this description, I imagine the first hearers would imagine seeing someone with a plank coming out of their eye, trying to help someone get a speck out of theirs. But with this language, he points out that we need not be hypocritical, that we need to examine ourselves first before we try to help others. I read about an older couple that had been traveling. And they stopped at a roadside restaurant for lunch. And after finishing their meal, they left the restaurant, got in their car, and continued their journey. But then the wife realized that she had left her glasses on the table. And so she mentioned it to her husband, and he exploded. He just could not believe that irresponsibility. And so he was so frustrated that he had to turn around and travel those miles back to the restaurant. And he just fussed and complained and scolded his wife relentlessly during the entire return journey. And she was relieved when they finally pulled into the parking lot of this restaurant. And she hurriedly got out to go into that restaurant to get her glasses. And when she did, her husband yelled out to her, "Well, while you're in there, you might as well get my hat." How often we're quick to point out the faults of others and try to ignore our own. Jesus says, get the log out of your own eye. And there are three kinds of logs we need to look for when dealing with conflict within ourselves. It may be the wrong attitude. That may be the log in our eye, that we may have been negative, critical, overly sensitive, and it's led to unnecessary conflict. It may be wrong words. Proverbs 12:18 says, reckless words pierce like a sword. Our words can cut. They can cut to the heart. They can really cause tremendous conflict. The proverb continues by saying the tongue of the wise brings healing. Or it may be wrong actions. We may be blind to our own wrong actions. We may need an honest friend or advisor who will help us take an objective look at ourselves and recognize that plank and be determined before we approach the other person and try to resolve the conflict. We need to start with ourselves. Start with the man or the woman in the mirror. And that leads to the third G, is gently restore. Gently restore. Another key principle of peacemaking involves an effort to help others understand how they have contributed to the conflict. Here's one passage that we could cite, Matthew 18, verse 15. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. Now notice the situation. Matthew 18, 15 is when your brother has sinned against you. But back in the Sermon on the Mount, I don't have this in the PowerPoint. You remember Jesus gives another scenario. He says, if you bring your gift to the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you. It's not that your brother has sinned against you, but you've sinned against your brother, then what are you to do? He says, leave your gift there before the altar. Go your way first, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So if you're the offender or the offended, what should happen is you meet somewhere in the middle. But with this mindset of gently restoring that relationship, I want to underscore this point that the purpose is restoration and not condemnation. The purpose is restoring that relationship, not just taking the opportunity to vent and to make those accusations and to point out faults. You put it back in its context in Matthew 18. In the three verses previous to verse 15, it tells about Jesus of a loving shepherd going to look out for a wandering sheep. And the idea is restoration. And that leads right into verse 15. And Jesus repeats this theme after telling us to go and show him his fault by adding, if he listens to you, you have gained your brother. Gained is a commercial term. It means to gain something of value. If he hears you, if he listens, if he recognizes his error, if he repents and you're reconciled, you have gained something valuable that could have been lost. And that's the goal here, to regain something of value. And he goes on to give the parable of the unmerciful servant. I love this parable. To remind us to be merciful and forgiving to others, just as God has forgiven us. And if we've been forgiven, we need to be forgiving of others. So this verse about going to your brother and show him his fault privately is sandwiched in this theme of restoration and not condemnation. Similarly, Galatians 6:1 gives us solid counsel on what our attitude and purpose ought to be when we go to our brother. Galatians 6:1, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Here's a brother caught up in some sin. What are we to do? We're to go to that person with the aim of restoration. And this word was used to describe the resetting of a bone that had been broken, to put it back into place. That should be our aim. With the right attitude and a spirit of gentleness, but also this admonishment, looking to yourself, lest you also be tempted. So yes, the right aim, but we must have the right attitude and take heed this admonishment. But our attitude should be one of gentleness rather than anger. And our purpose should be to restore rather than to condemn. And so when you go, when you've examined yourself and you've done your best to get that plank out of your own eye, and now you want to help your brother or sister remove the speck from theirs, when you go, let me suggest some scriptural principles and actions to keep in mind. Number one, and I think this is the place to start, pray for humility and wisdom. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. And if there's ever a need for wisdom, it's when we're trying to resolve conflict. We want to handle it the right way. So we need God's wisdom. Number two, plan your words carefully. Plan your words carefully. Don't go in with a shotgun approach. Think about what you're going to say. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. Just kind of gushes out. That's the shotgun approach. Somebody described their temper like that. Well, I just blow up like a shotgun. And someone pointed out, yes, but look at what damage is caused. So prepare. Plan your words carefully. Number three, anticipate likely reactions. Plan appropriate responses. Well, if he or she responds this way, how will I handle that? Or this? Think it through. Number four, choose the right time and place. There is a wrong time to try to resolve conflict. When the emotions are at their height, that's the wrong time to try to resolve it. And I think the time principle is found in Ephesians 4:26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not allow your anger to lead to sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. So, in other words, don't put it off until it's too late. But on the other hand, put it off until you've cooled off to where you can address the problem and not attack each other. I love this principle. Assume the best about the other person until you have the facts to prove otherwise. How many times have we made an assumption? We've prejudged someone, their motives or their actions, without having all the facts. In our court system, we have this statement, innocent until proven guilty. But I'm afraid so many times, if we're not careful, we have the mindset, guilty until proven innocent. And the scriptures teach love believes all things. And when that's applied to our relationships, I think that has this application of, I'm going to believe the best about you until I'm proven wrong. And you think about how much better that approach is. I'm not just going to assume you've got impure motives. I'm not going to assume you're an evil person. I'm going to believe that you have every good intention and that you are a loving person. Number 6, listen carefully. He who answers a matter before he hears it, it is folly and shame to him. As a parent, I've had to apologize many times. Why did you leave your plate and cup in the living room? Dad, that wasn't mine. Couldn't have been mine. But I've been proven wrong. I've had to apologize. We need to listen carefully. We need to find out all the facts before making judgments. Number 7, speak only to build others up. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. And it's not saying avoid the subject, avoid the problem. But it does speak to how we address it, what words we use in our approach in doing so. But then recognize your limits. Romans 12:18, if it is possible. I think the word if is one of the biggest words in the scripture. If it is possible, which suggests it may not be. As much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. There are some who just will not desire to reconcile. There are some who just will not admit their part in the conflict. What are we to do? We're to do our part. As much as depends on us, let's live peaceably with all men. 4th G, then go and be reconciled. We're seeking to glorify God. We're getting the log out of our own eye. We go with the intention of gently restoring someone. Then we need to go and be reconciled. And many times that will mean for us to forgive. And to accept forgiveness. I appreciated this statement. Even though Christians have experienced the greatest forgiveness in the world, we often fail to show that forgiveness to others. But notice how God forgives. Totally, completely, and He opens up the way for genuine reconciliation. He doesn't put us on a trial period. He completely accepts us and loves us. But He calls on us to forgive others in the same way. Bear with each other. Forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. What does it really mean to forgive? How do you know that you've really forgiven someone? I think it pertains to decisions that we've made. And this past week, I ran across this list of 4 promises of forgiveness. And you'll see they require a commitment on our part to forgive. Number 1, when you forgive someone, you're making this promise, I will not dwell on this incident. I'm not going to dwell on it anymore. Number two, I will not bring up this incident again and use it against you. I'm not going to dig up bones with bony fingers anymore. I'll not bring it up again. Number three, I will not talk to others about this incident. Oh, I forgive you, but I'm going to tell everybody about what you did. That's not forgiveness, is it? Number four, I will not let this incident stand between us or hinder our personal relationship. It's gone. Not forgotten. I don't think that's possible. And when we use that phrase, when God forgives, He forgets, I think it's to be understood that He's made this promise. I'm not going to bring it up against you anymore. And we need to forgive like that. It all goes back to our model for peacemaking is God Himself. Because in our sin, we were the ones that by our own choices are separated from Him. We're the enemy. We're the ones that have done those things that have offended Him. But yet He took those steps, the initial steps, the greatest steps, in order for us to be reconciled to Him. He gave His Son to die for us so that we might be reconciled to Him. It wasn't because we deserved it. We don't deserve it at all. But He took those steps. And He's calling upon us to do the same. Have you responded to His love? Have you responded by accepting that gift of salvation on His terms? And if you desire to do so tonight, if you desire to be baptized into Christ, we hope and pray that you'll do so. But may all of us reflect on what God has done for us in being reconciled and making peace with us. But may we in turn be peacemakers in every conflict that we encounter. If you're subject to the invitation of Christ, we invite you to come right now as we stand and sing.